Emilis on my left, and Davison, and our clerk on my right, Eliana Becca. And they are crucial to the work that we do here. I want to say that this is a hybrid meeting, which means that there are people in the room waiting to testify, as well as possibly some folks online waiting to testify. And Representative Strout is also online, as she is up in Washington County. So we will be first taking information from people in the room, and then we will move to those online. Although, Representative Strout, if you have questions for anyone testifying, please indicate in some way so that Representative Hepler can call on you. Yeah, we'll see that. All right. Thank you. Representative Strout is waving her hands. Okay, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to Representative Hepler to introduce the first bill we're going to be hearing today, and then Representative Strout will present the bill.
There we go. So good morning. Thanks, Representative Strout, for being here. And we're gonna do it in the order of the that's printed. So first up will be LD 64, an act to who eliminate the Cultureless American Oyster Growers License. And so Representative Strout, whenever you're ready.
Great. So thank you again for allowing me to present the bill on the behalf of the department via Zoom. And this is my first time presenting a bill on behalf of a department. So I think I was picked so I would ask my questions early and move the meeting along, but we'll see how that goes. So good morning, Senator Hepler, Representative Hepler, and distinguished members of the Marine Resources Committee. I am Representative Tiffany Strout from Harrington, representing the towns of Millbridge, Harrington, Columbia, Columbia Falls, Centerville, Addison, Jonesport, Beals, Jonesboro, Rope
Fortunately.
Bluffs, Whitneyville, and Machias. And I am here today to present and support LD 64, an act to eliminate the Clutchless American Oyster Growers License on behalf of the Department of Marine Resources. It is my understanding that this bill is to update an outdated clause in the current law due to the growth of the oyster industry and the natural movement of the species in the ocean environment. And then I would just like to say thank you for your time today. And I would be glad to answer any questions. But for the efficiency, of the day, I would direct specific questions to current law and updates to the representative from the Department of Marine Resources who will be testifying on this bill today.
Thank you, Representative Strout. Did you send any written testimony to the clerk
Nope.
this morning? Okay.
It
All
dawned on me I probably should do that at about, I don't know, 7:30.
right.
So I will do
You
that
just
and put it
email
in
it to
there
her. Yeah,
now. Yes.
that'd be great. Thank you. All right. So next up, I'm going to call the department. Whenever you're ready.
Okay, good morning. Senator Tepler, Representative Hepler, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on Marine Resources. My name is Cole Canwett. I am the Director of the Department of Marine Resources, Bureau of Public Health and Aquaculture, and I'm testifying on behalf of the department in support of LD 64. This is a department bill, and we are grateful to Representative Strout for sponsoring this bill on our behalf. The Cultureless American Oyster Growers License was originally created over 30 years ago and was established as the authorization in individual needs to grow cultureless American oysters. Cultureless is defined as the absence at the shell hinge of a foreign material or a scar, which indicates that an oyster has been cultivated. So I'm going to ad lib here a little bit. When oysters settle naturally, they settle on a hard substrate, usually, and kind of cement themselves to the rock or other shells. And so when you remove them from that hard substrate, you have to kind of chip them off and it makes a scar on the shell. So that's what we're talking about. That's the culch, is that scar. Historically, this license was viewed as a means to prevent poaching of oysters off of lease sites, as only oyster growers could obtain this license and possess cultureless oysters. And the reason, again, ad-libbing, that growers have cultureless oysters is because they settle them in a hatchery on tiny, tiny little grains. And so when they grow to an adult size, you can't see that scar. They look like they have no scar. Originally, all oyster growers were required to have this license, but over 10 years ago, the law was amended so that if you held a lease or a limited purpose aquaculture license, you were exempted from having to obtain the cultureless American oyster growers license. Beginning in 2018, an aquaculture license became required to remove, possess, transport, or sell cultured organisms, including American oysters. The fee for a cultureless American oyster grower's license is $12, and in most years, the department does not sell any because it no longer serves any functional purpose, other than preventing individuals who are not oyster growers from possessing cultureless oysters. Municipalities are authorized to include oysters in their shellfish ordinances, and increasingly, we are seeing them do that. While it may have historically been true that only cultivated oysters did not have a culch, that no longer seems to be the case, and even wild oysters may be culchless. Again, I'm just going to give you guys a little bit of other information. I talked to the area biologists, and there are currently 17 towns that have wild American oyster populations, from Kittery to Gouldsboro. There are 27 individual beds that staff have documented. And of those, about 85% have at least some portion of what you would call cultureless oysters, where they've settled on something even in the wild so small that it's very difficult to see a culch, just to give you an idea of how things have changed. Now I have to find my place again. harvesters who want to harvest a wild oyster resource already need to get a municipal shellfish license and a state shellfish license. There is no reason they should have to get a cultureless American oyster grower's license. Further, if there are cultureless oysters located off a lease or license site, those oysters should be available to any licensed harvester, not just aquaculturists. Finally, the existence of the license is currently preventing municipalities who wish to enhance the oyster resource in their flats by planting cultureless oyster seed from doing so. Fundamentally, as the laws around aquaculture leasing and licensing have evolved over the past three decades, the utility of this particular license has been eliminated. We have consulted with Marine Patrol, and they do not feel it is necessary in order for Patrol to enforce existing prohibitions on unauthorized removal of product from a lease site. Because this entire section of law is being repealed, we have included the current language below so you can see what is being struck. The other section of law that is being repealed is one that references this license and prevents an individual who does not have this license from possessing cultureless American oysters unless they have a bill of sale that includes the license number of the grower. Thank you for your consideration, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have. But I'm sure since that was crystal clear, you don't have any.
Thank you, Cole. I hate double negatives. It's right. I spent a good chunk of ASMFC looking at double negatives. So, but thank you. Any questions for Representative Thorne?
Thank you, Chair Hepler. Thank you for being here today and shedding light on this. For those of us who are not in the business, and again, just trying not to get ahead of ourselves, I did happen to read that there was some testimony in opposition of passing this bill. So I would have to ask, you know, advantage versus disadvantage, and anytime a department gives up a fee that brings in money, I have to say why, but you've already indicated that hardly anybody applies for this license now.
It's hard to know who would need the license, because if you have a lease or a aquaculture license, a limited purpose aquaculture license, you don't have to get it. And those are the folks who are using cultureless oysters from hatcheries. If you don't have that, then you would have to get it, but you can't get it without a bill of sale from buying oyster seed. And so where are you putting that oyster seed?
Right.
You know, you would probably have a lease or an LPA to put that oyster seed on.
So if you would just entertain me for a moment, a scenario today, I'm walking down low tide, whatever it may be, and I look down and I see an oyster. or a bunch of oysters. Is there anything preventing me from putting those into a bucket and taking them home?
So many things. It depends on what town you're in. You might have to have a town license. If you were going to sell them commercially, you might have to have a state license. But if you're just recreationally harvesting, you'd have to check about the town license. And then I think theoretically you would have to have a cultureless permit to have it. I would have to check back to make sure that that wasn't tied explicitly to commercial sales.
But let's fast forward in our minds and this passes. And now you don't need a license. Same scenario.
You still need the municipal shellfish license if you're recreationally harvesting, a state license if you are harvesting commercially, and then you would be able to take it to market.
Okay. As long as what? It wasn't attached to a rock?
If we get rid of this, the culchless license, then you would be able to take it to market if it was culched or unculched. So right now, people can go and chip oysters off rocks and take them to market without the cultureless license. But they can't pick up oysters that have just settled on, say, a mud flat or something like that on a little piece of rock or whatever. They couldn't take those.
Without a license.
Without a license. But then they have to have a bill of sale that they bought seed to put somewhere.
Right.
And that's sort of the contradiction.
But as long as I'm harvesting for my own consumption and I'm having a oyster party at my house, I can do that?
Yes, with all those licenses, yeah.
If I don't have a license?
With the municipal, you might have to have a recreational municipal license.
But if I don't, if the municipality doesn't require it?
Then you wouldn't need to, because the department doesn't have a recreational license.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Tepler.
Thank you very much for being here, Ms. Kenwitt. My question is, we did get a piece of testimony in opposition that's worried about the pressure on the Marine Patrol to prevent poaching. Do you see that as a problem with the dismissal of this license at all?
Well, we consulted with Marine Patrol before we considered submitting this bill, and they had a few perspectives on why they thought it was reasonable to get rid of the license. I would not want to speak for Marine Patrol, and I know they plan to come to the work session to answer questions in detail, but when we consulted them about putting this bill in, they had no problem with us removing it.
So they couldn't be here today, is that what you're saying?
I'm providing the testimony for the department,
okay.
And they're prepared to be here for the work session.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Simmons, I was hoping you had a question.
I have questions. I have comments. For someone that's harvested tens of thousands of oysters, it is not easy telling clutchless from cultured oysters at times. One of the spots that Cole has mentioned, there's quite a few places in the state of Maine that have American oysters wild and cultured oysters that are actually mixed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's very difficult to tell. Friendship is one of the places I've gotten them, the Sheepskit River. It's hard for me to tell, let alone Marine Patrol, and I've done it probably 10,000 times more than Marine Patrol has looked at oysters. And if we don't need the license, if it's not really being utilized, why would we keep it? Yeah. So, I mean.
And is that your question?
And that is, yes. Why would you yes. keep the license? Is there any justification for keeping it?
Yeah. The department does not deny that poaching is an issue that needs to be addressed. This does not seem like the appropriate tool to us to solve that problem.
Any other questions?
Thank you. And will you also be at the work session?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And
you
want to put extra copies of testimony?
You can give them to the clerk. Is there anyone else here, either in the room, who supports the bill? Is there anyone online? No one online supporting the bill. So anyone in opposition to the bill in the room?
Sebastian Bell from the Maine Aquaculture Association, here with regret.
So, and I was, I mean,
if there's only one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to use the clock, but if you could keep it to 3 minutes, that
I
would
will,
be great.
I will, as is unusual for me, I will read my testimony.
Okay. Thank you. Wait a minute. It's two pages. Okay.
Maybe you better put the clock on.
Yeah.
So, thank you. For being willing to listen to me. I have start with an apology. I cut and pasted this letter from last year, and it identifies Senator Rennie as a chair as opposed to Senator Tepler. My apologies for that. I
Great
stand,
way to start, by the way.
I'm digging myself out of a hole to begin with.
Also, it's got two different...
I know. It was one of those mornings. Senator Tepler and Representative Hepler, honorable members of the committee, thank you very much for being willing to listen to me. My name is Sebastian Bell. I'm the executive director of the Maine Aquaculture Association. We are based in Gardner, Maine. I stand before you today with regret to testify in opposition to LD 64, an act to eliminate the cultureless American oyster growers license. As it is currently drafted, LD 64 proposes to do two things. One is to eliminate the cultureless oyster grower's license, and two is to eliminate the requirement that anyone who is in possession of cultureless oysters must hold a cultureless oyster American grower's license unless they are a leaseholder. And it is the possession part that we are worried about. I will not drag the committee through the basic biology lesson about how cultureless oysters are created, other than to say that after consulting multiple experts, MAA has come to the conclusion that the likelihood of cultureless oysters occurring naturally in the wild is very low to virtually nil. Cultureless oysters are a unique result of the hatchery production methods, and if found in the wild, it is likely that they are there as a result of some human intervention, whether it is intentional or accidental. The original law was developed in cooperation with DMR and Marine Patrol in response to a problem with poaching of oysters from lease sites. Patrol made the point at the time that unless they actually caught someone in the act of poaching on the lease site, it was very difficult to prove the oysters were stolen. The possessions provision under 6073 sub 2A, which is proposed to be struck in this bill, were developed so that possession of cultureless oysters was prima facie evidence of poaching. MAA is concerned that as currently written and because of the elimination of the possession provisions under 6073 2 sub 2A, LD 64 may have a number of unintended consequences. Number one, LD 64 will likely increase poaching from oyster leases and may actually increase the risk of public health. Although 6073 will continue the prohibition from interference with the rights provided in a leaseholder, once oysters have left a lease site and are in possession of someone other than the leaseholder, a thief, for example, there will be no ability to determine where they came from. Although state law will require that they are tagged, it is highly unlikely that a harvester will disclose that they have stolen those leases from a lease site. If an illness occurs, the lack of the ability to accurately trace back the source of the oysters will inhibit the DMR's ability to do anything other than close broad areas of the state because they cannot precisely identify the source of the oysters and the illness. The second thing that may inadvertently happen as a result of LD 64 is, aside from the public health implications, LD 64 will likely significantly increase the incentive for poaching. At night or on a foggy day, it only takes a few minutes to pull up to an oyster farm and empty five or six cages into the skiff. The value of that illicit haul can quickly add up, and it is entirely possible that the thief can net over $1,000 for 10 or 15 minutes work. Compare that, for example, to a lobster pot where the thief would need a boat with a hauler and a single pot might yield $10 or $20 worth of product. So it's very easy to add up the value from an oyster farm because they are highly valuable. They're 80 cents to a dollar a piece. Finally, LD 64 will likely result in increased conflict on the water. When oysters are farmed on a lease site, whether they are farmed in cages or on the bottom, some oysters inevitably will spill off the lease site due to weather, currents, or other events. Technically, once those oysters are off the lease, they are fair game to wild shellfish harvesters if LD 64 goes through as written. LD 64 will provide a strong incentive for wild harvesters to harvest right up to the line of the aquaculture lease and may provide temptation to cross the line accidentally onto the lease itself. Oyster farmers will be forced to protect their investments and conflicts will occur. Maine oyster farmers have spent years developing good relations with our fellow working waterfront stakeholders. We do not want those relationships to be damaged by unintended consequences from LD 64. As many members of this committee know, MAA has a long tradition of working with the Department of Marine Resources to help ensure that the policies and rules they enact are practical, effective, and fair. Maine would like to respectfully suggest a modification to the current version of LD 64 that would address some of our concerns and help the department achieve what it is seeking to do. To be very clear, MAA is not seeking to limit the harvest of naturally occurring American oysters in any way. MAA supports the elimination of the cultureless oyster license, but would like to see a provision that establishes a limit on what percent of a wild harvester's harvest is comprised of cultureless oysters. We would propose a tolerance level similar to what is allowed for wild clam harvesters who are allowed to have up to 10% of their harvest be sublegal size clams. If a wild shellfish harvester harvests wild oysters, they would be allowed to have up to 10% of that harvest be cultureless oysters. Anything over that 10% would be evidence that they had poached from a lease site in violation of the prohibition on interference under 6073 sub 2. MAA has a long tradition of seeking practical and fair solutions to marine policy challenges. We hope to continue that tradition and respectfully ask the committee to consider our suggested modifications to LD 64. And thank you for your attention and more than willing to answer any questions.
Thank you. Question, Senator Tepler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if it's okay, I have two questions. One is, what does MAA think the best method of dealing with poaching is?
Well, I think, you know, Marine Patrol is obviously the method of dealing with poaching. They try very hard to do a very good job, and they are stretched very thin. We at MAA have argued, and this committee knows this, many, many years in front of appropriations for additional resources for Marine Patrol and for the department. We have always been very supportive of additional resources for Marine Patrol. So when this provision was originally passed, some of our growers actually conducted workshops with Marine Patrol to allow them to tell the difference between cultureless and cultured oysters. So we actually sat down with them and trained them around that. That hasn't happened for many years, and it might be helpful to Marine Patrol if we did that.
Okay, and I guess I'm hoping that Marine Patrol will also answer that question for us when they come to the work session. But my other question is, who are the buyers of poached oysters?
It's a great question. We would like to know the answer to that, too. I think, you know, buyers are licensed buyers. And so there are people who perhaps are less scrupulous than other people and are willing to purchase stolen goods. But it's sometimes difficult for if a harvester doesn't report that those oysters come off a lease site on their tag when they deliver it to the dealer. It's tough for the dealer to know where those oysters came from. You know, they might be labeled as coming from Bay X or Y, but they wouldn't obviously be labeled as coming from lease X or Y if that wasn't the leaseholder.
So when a leaseholder sells oysters, they indicate that those oysters are from their lease site.
We have to label that specifically on the label. There has to be so, and that's for the traceback ability for the department to find out what's going on and where from. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm still a little confused about whether poaching needs to be handled with this license or in some other way. Thank you.
No worries. And again, we support the elimination of the license. So it's, I think I agree with DMR that that license is kind of outdated as a mode. But I think the possession piece is really what is important to us, so that Marine Patrol has some sort of a way to check on things.
Did you have your hand?
Not yet.
Okay. Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Get the non-fisherman questions out of the way first, because it's an educational moment for a lot of us that don't deal with, you know, having a tag on a bag. Who can buy? I mean, can somebody go directly to a restaurant, for example, and say, hey, I got a bag without a tag that I'd like to sell you?
No. You need a tag on that bag.
Okay. Period.
Yeah.
And where do you get the tags?
You get them from the department, or you can print them yourself as long as they comply with the department's specifications.
Okay. So if somebody is has an oyster license and finds these, as Representative Simmons suggested, that there's a lot more out there now just through attrition and over the years. And you look at the bottom of every one, is that how that's determined?
Yeah, so this is, I think, where we perhaps disagree with the department. There is no question in my mind, and my members, I think, would all agree that there is an increase in naturally occurring oysters in the state of Maine. Whether those are cultureless or not is where the debate is. And if it's helpful for the work session, I can have a hatchery owner come in and talk about how cultured and cultureless oysters differ and how they are produced. It is the product of how they settle in the hatchery that produces a cultureless oyster. And for that to happen in the wild is pretty unusual. I'm not saying it never happens, but it would be highly unlikely.
Just because of the tidal flow? Current.
And because of the way they settle from the larvae and the substrate that they settle on. It has to settle, in order to be cultureless, the larvae has to settle on an individual grain of sand. And that's exactly what we do in the hatchery. But the likelihood of that happening in the wild is pretty unusual.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. How often does poaching occur, and like, what are the estimated annual losses that farmers face from poaching?
It's a great question. Before this possession law was in place, we had problems on the Damariscotta River, on the Sheepscot River, and I think you'll hear from somebody else today that they are continuing to have problems in an area down east. We don't know the total damage, if you will, the total loss. And we can certainly poll our members and see if we can get a number for them. But I don't know off the top of my head how much it is. But it's very, this very well, the value of an individual oyster is quite high. And so it's quite easy to rack up a big loss pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When poaching occurs, is farmers reaching out to Marine Patrol? Like, where is there, like, somewhere that we can kind of see like a log of like how many instances this has occurred? Is there like essentially an equivalent of like a police report or something?
I don't know that that Marine Patrol is actually logging this, but I do know that we have individual members who talk to their local Marine Patrol officers quite frequently. Certainly, if a farmer suspects that they're being poached, they will go to Marine Patrol. There's no question. And in fact, that was the genesis of the possession a piece here, because we had poaching on the Damariscotta River. And so the growers went to their local MPO and said, how do we solve this? And one of the things that at the time the Marine Patrol said is, if we have this as a tool, then possession is prima facie evidence of poaching, and that gives us an enforcement tool. Now, it sounds to me like the department and the Marine Patrol has changed their position on that, and I'm sure they'll come and explain that in the work session. But, you know, you think about it, if somebody's in possession of oysters that are cultless oysters off a lease site, and somebody says, where did you get those? It's pretty hard to prove that they came off a lease, right? And particularly if, in fact, and even though we disagree on the fact that the department is saying that cultless oysters are increasing in frequency in the wild, but if they were, that would make it even more difficult to prove, right? Poaching, you know, there is an incentive to poach. And don't get me wrong, I don't in any way want to leave this committee with the impression that a lot of wild harvesters are doing this. That's not the case. I think it's just, you know, as with anything, there are a few bad apples, and temptation is strong when the money is involved.
Representative Simmons.
I guess my question would be, do you know of anybody or potentially anybody just buying seed and throwing it in a river just outside of a lease, you know, without getting a lease, acquiring one? I know there's been a few cases where they've done that, and it's so those people are actually taking up that bottom without having a lease, but yet you still can't harvest those oysters because you don't have a license.
Right.
Or you're going to be fined for having possession of those oysters without somebody acquiring a lease.
Yeah.
So how do we fix that problem?
I think it's a fair question, Representative. And, you know, number one, you have to ask yourself, why would somebody go to a hatchery and pay money for a product that they know they can't harvest, right? That's kind of counterintuitive. On the issue of municipalities that want to go to a hatchery, buy seed and use that as a stock enhancement program, we as an association are very supportive of that and would like to find a way with municipalities to allow that to happen. I think that's a good thing, and but we haven't had that discussion with the municipal folks yet, but we're certainly open to doing that, and I would commit to this committee that if that's a direction that the committee wanted us to go, we would go and sit down with some municipal folks and have that discussion.
Representative
whatever my name is.
I know. Right?
Remember Hepler. Yes, Tepler. Yes. Hi. I'm sorry. You suggested that there be a discussion about a percentage of possession of cultless oysters. I'm confused about what that actually means. Can you explain that a little further?
Sure. So if you are a licensed shellfish harvester and you go out and harvest wild oysters that are naturally occurring, and there is some percentage of those that are cultless, what we're saying is that that's okay up to a point. But if there's a high percentage of cultless oysters, then that's really evidence that you probably harvested them off a lease site, not off a wild bed. And so it's a way of trying to allow for people to harvest wild oysters without encouraging people to go and poach from lease sites. So it's kind of an attempt to find a middle ground here.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Yeah. So what would that percentage most reasonably be?
We're proposing 10%, which is the same percentage as is allowed for wild clam harvesters on undersized clams. So just to make it consistent with other shellfish regulations.
I guess undersized seems different to me because that's something that's judged differently. I'm confused about the science behind that 10%. And I guess I'd like some more science applied to this suggestion.
Yeah, I think if we applied science, it would be 0%, to be very direct with you. It wouldn't be any percentage at all, because we don't agree that there are naturally occurring cultless oysters in any significant percentage. But what we're saying is Okay, we'll settle on 10%, and we'll live with that. But I would be glad to, as I said, to bring a hatchery owner to the work session and have them explain how this, the difference between cultured and cultureless, and how that might play out.
Tiffany has a
question. Oh yeah,
thank you.
She's the sponsor.
Oh, can we have? Really?
Yeah, she's not supposed to.
Yeah,
I could.
Yeah,
for the apartment bill too.
I know. So apparently, Representative Strout, there is a policy about not letting sponsors ask questions of.
Oh, now I understand yeah. the request. Yep, noted.
I will say, Representative, noted. That from. From my perspective, I'm glad to answer any questions you have off the horseshoe. If you want to reach out to me directly, I'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
What?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
I got a question.
Oh, Representative Simmons.
So, you want? I guess you encourage municipalities to possibly do oysters, but they would be clutchless. So how do you address that issue if you have a shellfish harvester taking oysters from the bottom that the town put there without a lease?
We'd have to come up with the municipalities on a system to allow that and have it be traceable. And we're willing to have that discussion. I think that's, you're right. That's the issue. But I do think, you know, from our perspective, if municipalities want to go into the restoration business, our hatcheries would love to be part of that, and we'd try to help them in any way we can.
Okay. Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not that anybody would be watching who's not following this closely, but again, I have to ask, there's cultured oysters and cultureless oysters?
There's culched, not cultured, but culched and culchless.
And culchless.
Yeah.
And I did go to a soiree at the Augusta Civic Center, and there were all kinds of different oyster bars all over that were evidently just from different areas, different rivers, perhaps.
Different farms, probably.
Different
farms. Yeah.
But there's not a way to determine.
So those would all be culchless oysters if they were coming off a farm, because they were bought from the hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
And the seed that the hatchery produces is culchless seed.
But there's no distinction of taste or
oh, there's lots of distinctions of taste. It's like wines, Representative. It's you know, the oyster takes on the taste of the area that it's grown in.
But not the appearance. You wouldn't be able to necessarily tell the appearance. I know, for example, smallmouth bass, I can take it out of Pleasant Pond in Island Falls, which is spring fed, and the bass appears green. You fish it over in Mattawamkeag Lake, which is brackish water, and it has kind of a bronze look to it. Same species, but just different appearance. And I was just curious if there is any distinction between the two different types of oysters.
Not between culched and culchless either, except for the fact that one has settled on one tiny little piece of grain and so is an individual oyster versus another which has settled on lots of different things and is probably a clump of oysters. So that's the difference between culched and culchless. Within the farmed oyster, which are all culchless, there are differences in appearance depending on where it's grown, how it's been handled, has it been tumbled multiple times? There's lots of different things that determine what those oysters look like.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else in the room? Please come on up.
Good morning and thank you. I'm new to this.
Sign in, please.
Oh, sign in.
Thank you. You just introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Yeah. My name is Evan Young. I'm from Hancock, Maine, but I have an oyster farm in the Blue Hill Salt Pond. And I'm here to oppose this bill mainly because I have somebody stealing oysters from me all the time. Us oyster farmers, we get our oyster seed from the hatcheries. And what hasn't been said today is we have to work these oysters three times a week to get them so they don't clump together or anything else. So they're individual oysters. So we're putting a lot of time and effort into making sure these oysters are individual oysters, which the market wants. Okay, they don't want to see deformities and everything else. So we've got a lot of work and effort into this. And by having to handle those this often, we've got a lot of money into them, as well as buying the oysters. I'm sort of new in the oyster business. I've been doing it probably 12 years. I'm not a biologist. I can't answer any biology questions. I can answer any questions to do with the actual farm. I've lost roughly $50,000 to $60,000 worth of oysters in the last 2 years. The person stealing these oysters are taking them to a dealer in Belfast and selling them, and the buyer knows he's buying stolen oysters, but he says Marine Patrol hasn't told him he cannot buy from this guy, so he continues to buy from him. So Marine Patrol does know my situation. They are helping me or trying to help me, but we have to actually catch him on the site doing it. And it's a lot of money, so he's learned to go at night. He's learned to go in high tide versus low tide. I can't be there all the time and then continue to work every day. But I guess if this law passes, then I guess I'm going to have to. But we put our oysters, we start our oysters on the surface in bags, and then we just broadcast them on the bottom. We have a lease that allows us to broadcast them on the bottom. So they're just sitting there in anywhere from, depending on the tide, a foot of water to 5 feet of water. So anybody can go by and see them. And we have all kinds of people with kayaks and stuff come by and ask us, and we explain to them what we're doing and tell them, if you go off the lease and you want a few oysters, go ahead. But if you want to have something to eat, we'll give you some. We've got no problem, because the more people there helping us see everybody else that's around, the better chance of catching, as I call it, my friend. But I already know that my friend takes the smaller oysters that he can't sell, and he is putting them in other places and hiding them under seaweed. And Marine Patrol knows this, so he can go get them later and not actually be on my lease. So I think, personally, you got to come up with a way to hurt the buyer as much as the stealer. And the other thing I just want to mention is with the Vibrio thing, the guy that stole mine, I believe, I'm 99% sure, the guy that's stealing my oysters is why the Vibrio rule went in effect in Eastern Maine. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't know how to handle them, and he doesn't care how he handles them. So if you're collecting clutched oysters or clutchless oysters on the tidal in the Vibrio season, you have 2 hours to get them on ice or cool down or whatnot. And if somebody's just going by intertidal, as soon as that tide leaves those, you've got 4 or 5 hours of tidal that you've got to work. And there's not many people that are going to carry ice to keep that right. And I'm worried that if people get sick, then the state's just going to have to blanket shut down areas, and it's going to hurt all aquaculture. So, and as far as towns doing it, I think it's great. I could not get a lobster license, and that's why I'm in aquaculture, and I want to work on the water. And I applaud everybody that wants to. It's fun. And there's bad days, but there's good days. So,
thank
Thank you very much.
Yep.